The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable John W. Turner presiding.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
Our first case is People v. Lotion. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's case number 4210695. Would counsel for appellant please identify yourself?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Robert McIntyre of Acton and Snyder LLP in Danville for Mr. Lotion.
Okay, thank you. And for the appellee?
I'm David Mashin. I'm with the appellate prosecutor here on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Manchin. As the two of you can see, one member of this panel, Justice Harris, is unable to participate in the Zoom hearing today. However, he has read the briefs, he's completely familiar with the case, and he will be listening to the audio recording of today's hearing, and he will ultimately fully participate in the final decision rendered by this court. Having said that, you may proceed, Mr. McIntyre.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, to the extent that it's appropriate, I want to indicate that my filing and my argument is going to be critical of this particular decision by Judge Goodwin. Frankly, he and I are cordial colleagues. We both grew up in Kankakee County and found our way to Vermilion County. And so whatever I say, I hope is taken as a professional criticism and nothing inappropriate or personal. Now, having said that, I think the overall picture here essentially in our view is a case in which Judge Goodwin felt that he been alerted to an impropriety. I expect this court is going to think it's an impropriety, though there is perhaps a reasonable argument that Mr. Lotion's communications with the jury doesn't rise to the level of an impropriety, but even were it an impropriety, that Judge Goodwin, essentially having been alerted to it, decided that he had no choice but to declare a mistrial. And it's essentially our global position, if you will, contrary to the legal standard of finding that a manifest necessity exists for a mistrial, there was no manifest necessity, and essentially the court had alternatives that His Honor failed to consider. And I'm going to suggest an oral argument that actually, based on the briefs we've submitted, the first alternative is to just go ahead with the trial itself, because in the cases now, admittedly, I've cited several cases involving refusals to grant defense motions for mistrial, but I think those are applicable when a mistrial is declared by the court or the state without the agreement of the defendant.
Counsel, let me stop you there. Wouldn't there be a danger that the jurors who had contact with your client might hold that against him? And is it something the court needs to consider?
In two ways, I think so, yes. Number one, though, what he needs to consider under the, got to look at my notes here if I can, and under the Street case under those factors, one of the things the court needs to consider is if the trial goes ahead, what's the likelihood of a reversal based on what has taken place? And in this case, I think it's fairly clear that there wouldn't be any chance of a reversal. Number one, because I think we've cited at least one case, the Ward case, that basically says just from an unauthorized communication, there isn't any presumption of prejudice. We don't think the record supports any actual indication of prejudice. And so it's number one, we're suggesting that so far that based on the record that's there, even though one of the jurors apparently felt uncomfortable, there isn't any indication that that juror felt that they couldn't be fair. And so we're suggesting that perhaps His Honor is looking out in what we would suggest a misguided way for Mr. Lotion. But on the other hand, there's no indication that that the or the lack of comfort is going to be such that Mr. Lotion can't receive a fair trial from these jurors. Even if one of the jurors felt improper, and I think in the Williams case we cited, there was testimony from one of the jurors that juror felt they could no longer be fair, and that felt that their fellow jurors had been perhaps exposed to some prejudice in the Williams court. Now again, we're denying Williams's motion for a mistrial in that case, but there's an indication that the court says no, even though one juror might feel that they were prejudiced, that juror could be excused.
And counsel, so you mentioned presumptions, no presumption of prejudice with the contact. I think you were citing the Ward case. In this particular scenario, we have all these different contacts. The number of contacts, does that affect the presumption potentially?
It could, though. I want to indicate, and I don't necessarily agree with the appellee's brief that there were eight jurors contacted.
That's fair, yeah. but this is repeated contact. So with regard to the no presumption of prejudice with contact, with each contact, wouldn't that affect the prejudice potentially for the court looking at the totality of the circumstances and going forward?
Well, it occurs to me in looking at the record of the hearing on our motion to dismiss, I would say the record overall, the worst that it reflects on behalf of Mr. Lotion is a misguided attempt to ingratiate himself with the jurors. There isn't any indication or I think responsible inference that he was actually trying to make any sort of pitch as far as what the evidence was going to be. In other words, even that he was innocent. It's just more of an attempt to, I suppose, ingratiate himself with the jurors by common courtesy. And frankly, nothing more than we lawyers do when we're voir dire-ing. I'm not saying that's inappropriate. I think that's perfectly fine in a courtesy setting and in an open court where everybody sees what's going on. So I'm not trying to say that means Mr. Lotion can go over the lunch hour and say howdy to the jurors. Don't get me wrong. But on the other hand, you can see where I would suggest and see where a lay person might be, a little bit misled in the thinking that somehow a good thing to do.
Well, let me pick up on that. You used the term layperson. Jurors are lay people.
Yes.
We all know the trial judge's paramount responsibility to see that the defendant's rights are protected and he receives a fair trial. The state has a right to fair and impartial jurors. But what about the court's responsibility to be sure that the jurors feel comfortable, aren't threatened, things of that nature? These are lay people. These aren't, you know, these arguments aren't so controversial for us in the business, but what about lay people sitting on that jury and the judge's responsibility to see that they're comfortable and can still give the defendant a fair trial?
Yeah. Well, I think that could be, in this case, I think that could have been addressed in some other fashion than just saying, and essentially, I think it's about the first or second page of the report of proceedings that, Judge Goodwin takes the bench and says he's going to declare a mistrial. And either Mr. Lotion will agree to what he's done, or there will be a hearing, but in either event, it's going to be a mistrial. And I think that there's at least alternatives of either instructing the jury and saying, look, you know, if anybody has approached you over the lunch hour, that's inappropriate, admonish Mr. Lotion in the presence of the jurors. And even then, following up, if there's to be an instruction in that like that, you can always give a limiting instruction in the same way that you've done maybe when there's been inadmissible evidence stricken from the record or something like that, to the effect of, please don't, I'm instructing you essentially not to hold that against either side.
Let me just interject. That's an excellent argument. I am with you. The problem is, as a former trial judge, litigator, I'm listening to this and I'm reminded that abuse of discretion gives the most deference to the trial court. The trial court's in the best position. The trial court, the judges matters, the trial court did witness some of the defendant's actions. So how do we take this decision away from the trial judge?
Well, and my suggestion at least is on this record, there was a hearing and the testimony of the witnesses, I think, gives you the same information that Judge Goodwin had. I know in one of the street factors there is a reference to essentially things that the trial judge is in a superior position to know. But here, His Honor doesn't make reference other than to begin with, he makes reference to what has been reported to him, and appropriately so, by the way, by bailiffs and jurors. But once the hearing is done, I think it's a fair inference that what the witnesses have said is all the information that Judge Goodwin had, and now it's been put on the record. And so I think in this case, you can look at it and say, well, was there an abuse of discretion based on what we're saying? And the other, of course, the other aspect of abuse of discretion is, I think, it needs to seem that the judge, made a decision weighing alternatives. And in this case, I think it's fair to say I didn't see anything on the record that, or the record made at the time of the order of the mistrial that said the judge had thought about anything other than a mistrial. So you at least ought to exercise discretion.
That's a fair argument. And for sure, the court could have admonished the jury and continued the jury trial. But we'd expect that to be part of the analysis the court would go through prior to declaring a mistrial. So had the court, in this case, Judge Goodwin simply stated as part of his ruling, he considered that, how does that affect your argument?
I'm still would argue that even had he considered it and rejected it, he still had other alternatives to consider. One of the things, by the way, I wanted to disagree with in the appellee's brief, I know there's an assertion that Mr. Lotion, you know, the court could somehow reasonably conclude that no defendant would request a six-person jury. In the six-person jury case we cited from the Illinois Supreme Court, it was the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office complaining about defendants requesting six-person juries. It was Joe Burkett, who's now, of course, an appellate justice, saying, hey, wait a minute, no, if you want a trial, it's a 12-person jury, and defendants were saying, no, give us six. And the Supreme Court said that was fine, but that was, you know, that case was taken because defendants liked six-person juries and Mr. Burkett did not. Okay.
I want to clarify, you do not dispute that our standard of review is abuse of discretion.
Judge, that's what the cases tell me. And I don't think, in this case, I don't think it's necessary to review that, because I'm suggesting that at least in this particular case, you see a lack of consideration to discretion, and perhaps, and you know, I think it's fair to say, I mean, Judge Goodwin obviously has made his record. I don't know that at the time he declared the mistrial, he thought he had discretion.
You keep saying the time he declared the mistrial. I misread the facts. Are you saying he declared the mistrial before he had the hearing? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, that's...
Okay, well, explain to me how that happened.
Okay. Well, essentially, he had... Laid my hands on the wrong transcript. Here it is. He had... I don't have that transcript printed out, but I think it's fair to say on about page one or two of the report of proceedings that took place. Essentially, he took the bench, addressed the parties, and said, summarizing here, said that he had been told by court personnel that essentially Mr. Lotion had been had contacted jurors during the lunch recess, and that essentially one of two things was going to happen: either Mr. Lotion would admit to his conduct and he was going to declare a mistrial, or there was going to be a hearing. Now, I did say if the hearing bore out what had been reported to him, then there was, I think he basically said in either event, there was going to be a mistrial.
He said there was going to be a mistrial regardless of what came out at the hearing.
I think it's more the idea that he said there was going to be a mistrial if the hearing bore out what had been reported to him over the noon hour. In other words, if somebody had said, no, that never happened, I mean, he wouldn't have declared a mistrial.
So where what's the malice in that? I mean, this could be as much, I've been in this situation, this could be as much as court docketing, scheduling. We've got other things, other cases may be going. Says, look, if these facts are borne out, we may have to declare a mistrial here. That lets everybody know this, we won't be taking 2 days to try this matter. Next case is up. I mean, that could be scheduling as much as anything else.
Well, but boy, you know, if it's scheduling, I guess it troubles me that that's manifest necessity. I hesitate to say malice. I think Judge Goodwin thought he was doing the right thing in that sense. But I do suggest that that what that means is, unless something, unless different facts came out at the hearing, he'd already decided there would be a mistrial.
What's troubling is we're all trying to get into the mind of the trial judge, and you argued the judge didn't potentially believe he had discretion. But, you know, perhaps born out of the five or six instances of contact, the court is concerned about some type of prejudice entering the trial some way later, because there's all of these situations out there. So the court's worried about the integrity of the trial. So I think it's difficult to try to get into the court's mind, because there's a lot going on, and the court is trying to see that both parties have a fair trial.
Well, and you know, and again, I guess, you know, I'm not trying to say that, you know, that this is a, you know, horrendous call necessarily. I do think, however, based on the cases and the record, that it, you know, it was the wrong call. I mean, there's still, you know, this trial could have been saved. Could have been saved. And I think, you know, the inference that somehow the state would be prejudiced because, you know, Mr. Lotion was, you know, was essentially trying to ingratiate himself with the jurors is, I mean, I think that I suggest that speculation. Okay. My suggestion is more likely to be the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you. You're out of time, but you'll have rebuttal. Mr. Manchin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. In this case, the trial court did not abuse its discretion in declaring, is my video working now?
It's on now.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
My computer said it was working, but sorry about that. Anyway, the abuse of discretion is determined by, could any reasonable person in the judge's position reach that same decision? If no reasonable person could reach it, there's an abuse of discretion. And this court is not to decide, would we have reached the same decision? And that is what counsel is arguing today, is that we look at just the facts presented at the hearing and determine for yourself whether or not a mistrial was warranted. But the court considered more than just the testimony that was presented at the hearing. The trial court expressly referred to the defendant's conduct in the courtroom in basically rushing out of the court when the jury was dismissed and trying to follow them as closely as possible. So we do have the court judge making a decision based not only on the testimony, but on the defendant's demeanor and what he actions in the court, which are not before this court. So the deference that is entitled to the judge should be applied here. There are a number of different factors that are going into a decision for a mistrial. Who caused a problem? Here is the defendant's. Was a problem created intentionally? Yes. The trial court expressly found that the defendant was trying to ingratiate himself to the jury by painting himself as a good guy, somebody who's not likely to go out committing crimes or beating up other people. And the trial court expressly found that the defendant's conduct in approaching 5 to 8 jurors created a great danger of prejudice to both the state and the defendant. By the state was prejudiced by the fact that the defendant was trying to bias the jury in his favor by appearing to be a nice guy. But the trial court said that at the same time, approaching the jury in that way can create a potential for a backlash. So I think the trial court's considerations as to why he was ordering his trial was completely proper, because he was worried about both sides being potentially prejudiced by the defendant's deliberate misconduct in approaching these jurors. And the nature of the conduct is really striking. You have him talking to one juror as they're going down the stairs in the courthouse itself. He approaches two jurors in a restaurant who report being uncomfortable at his approach. You then have him driving alongside jurors walking down the street, talking to them from his moving vehicle for 2 to 3 minutes. If that does not create problems for a fair and impartial trial for both sides, I do not know what doesn't. So I think the trial court's decision was eminently reasonable. The fact that he does not expressly on the record discuss alternatives is irrelevant. He's presumed to know the law, and there is no requirement, and I cite cases as a fact, that the trial court discuss all alternatives. And I don't think there were any good alternatives to doing this. Going to trial is problematic, just as Justice Kavanaugh said. You're worried about the integrity of the judicial process. And when you've got a defendant who has approached this many jurors, there's just too much problems with that to safely go on. And I submit that had the trial court not declared a mistrial, this would in fact have been raised on appeal, whether or not the defendant would ever succeed in the appeal. But I'm certain that if it had gone to trial, the defendant's claim on appeal would be the trial judge should have declared a mistrial. And this is not a case where the court had prejudged the thing. What the trial judge said was, I was given information that the defendant has contacted witnesses. If the defendant admits to that, or if the witnesses are proved that that has happened, I will be a mistake trial will be declared. That's not prejudging it. He only declared the mistrial once it was proved that the defendant had so much contact with so many different witnesses. This is a case where, as Justice Kavanaugh said, the trial judge could have ruled either way, and it would not have been abuse of discretion, because the factors are there, and it's just how does he weigh them? And this court should defer to his judgment that this was just too much of a problem to proceed with this jury with whatever instructions given to them, or to try to go with a jury of less than 12. Because what happens if you get a jury of six and one of them gets sick? Are you going to be able to get a, can you get a valid verdict with five jurors? I think the option of a jury of less than 12 is ridiculous, given the number of jurors the defendant contacted. And what do you tell the jurors that are left? Why did there's six or seven of their comrades suddenly disappear over the lunch hour?
So I think, you know, fair. It's a fair argument that the jury could have been admonished, and this could have trial could have continued with the jury of six, maybe an alternate. Maybe they accept a jury of five. I'm not sure about that particular point, but I think that's a tough argument you're trying to make.
I'm just saying that with the standard of review and with the facts in front of this court, this trial court, that the trial court's decision was not an abuse of discretion. It was entirely reasonable for him to conclude that a mistrial was required. The fact that somebody else might have reached a different decision does not mean that he was abusing his discretion, because he was basing it not only on the testimony that was presented at hearing, but on his own observations of the defendant in the courtroom, in finding that the defendant was, I think the judge actually used the words jury tampering. as applied to the defendant, saying the defendant was trying to make him appear to be something he's not, trying to ingratiate himself to the jury, trying to create bias in his favor. And given the court's duty to give a fair trial to both sides, I think he made the correct decision here to say this conduct is just so egregious that that a mistrial is required. And I think that his decision should be affirmed by this court. The trial judge noted how persistent he was in doing this, the number of the juries, the speed with which he left the courthouse, and how he had to be restrained to keep him from leaving the courtroom in the middle of the jury as they're leaving the courthouse. I think this is a poster child for a defendant trying to gain an advantage, and the trial court acted properly in saying, no, you're not going to get an advantage, and I'm not going to let you prejudice the jury against you by your own conduct. We're going to start over again. I think that was a reasonable decision. If there are no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Manchin. Mr. McIntyre, do you have any rebuttal?
Well, yes, I do, Judge. With respect to the jury tampering, that was kind of interesting. I didn't brief it. For what it's worth, to your honor's decision, perhaps it's not worth that much. Mr. Loschen actually started to testify, and then as a result of the court's admonition, decided not to testify. And one of the things the court, actually kind of alluded to was jury tampering. Well, I think, frankly, I think that's quite a stretch. And I think, for instance, the Ward opinion that we've cited speaks to that. That is the one case I was able to find that involved defendant as opposed to some third party communicating with the juror.
Wasn't the jury tampering comment interjected as part of the admonishment, though? We're not talking about the court is admonishing the defendant, mm-hmm. testifies, the state could potentially use what he's going to say to pursue some other charges. That's where that came into this case.
Oh, I think so. But I mean, I think it did, the thought did, because of that, I think the thought did occur to his honor. As counsel says, that there might have been jury tampering, but I think I merely suggest that the record doesn't show jury tampering, and that that the Ward court at least would disagree that these efforts at ingratiation would be jury tampering. In terms of what the defendant was doing, the ingratiation is a fair argument, but I also would suggest that there's more to declaring a mistrial than just punishing the defendant in this case for what we're suggesting isn't grounds for declaring a mistrial. Doesn't meet the manifest necessity standard. It suggested, how are you going to deal with the jury, and what would all, we're kind of get down the rabbit hole there. But that's the kind of thing trial judges do all the time. If a juror has to be excused, and a lot of times you don't tell the jury why the juror had to be excused. If the court had considered the one juror who said he felt he or she felt uncomfortable, and even the companion of that jury, excusing those two and seating an alternate, a lot of times the court doesn't say, why your fellow jurors are gone. The court just says, we've seated two alternates, two jurors have been excused, you're not to consider why that is. Those are everyday trial judge tasks, and frankly, tasks that Judge Goodwin, I think, would have been well up to and would have been able to well navigate had he thought that he had those choices. Thank you.
I'll ask a question. Mr. McIntyre, your seasoned counsel, you make some excellent legal arguments here for us to consider. But I just want to get your answer because I want to get your thoughts on the remedy in this case. You know, the defendant's Fifth Amendment protections are sacred, but here we have the defendant deliberately contacting as many jurors as he can over lunch hour. So really the defendant interjected the necessity to take up and consider a mistrial. So I guess what I want to hear from you is your best argument on how this remedy is appropriate. The defendant interjected these issues, and the remedy is that he will not be tried for the underlying offense.
Okay. And, you know, my suggestion is, Judge, that if it's unfair, you know, your honors can consider it. But my suggestion as to far as Judge Goodwin's viewpoint on this is that any such contact, however innocuous, must result in a mistrial. That there's no other way to save the situation, no other way to go ahead with this unless, when the jury's been impaneled and sworn. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that consideration needs to be given to the fact that even if Mr. Lotion has frankly been a bonehead, and parenthetically, I don't think he was trying to sabotage the trial. And it's obvious he was actually wanting these jurors to hear his trial rather than sabotage. That is, I guess, our suggestion. That's not the law. And if you declare a mistrial under those circumstances, then at least you need to be mindful or understand that it can result in former jeopardy.
Thank you.
Justice Kavanaugh, do you have any follow-up question to that?
No answer to my question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McIntyre, and also thank you, Mr. Manchin. The case is submitted, and the court now stands in recess.